City of Angels. I love it, too. It's Mike Commission's Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. That's Ozomatli, friends of my guest, Elizabeth Upton. You can find information about Elizabeth on the web at elizabethupton.com, and you can link to her site from my site at mikehagan.com. Hi, Elizabeth. It's just about, 11 o'clock now in the p.m. there in California?
Yep, just about 11.
All right. I think that I'd like to talk with you now about specifically this new project that you have on sacred geometry and certainly involving some of the cultures down there south of the border. But before I do that, I want to ask you about John. We met pretty much through my friend John Major Jenkins, who's a great scholar and a wonderful teacher and a friend of mine and somebody who's been on the program here three or four times over the last couple of years and someone who I just totally dig. And he got a hold of me, it was a while back, and said, hey, you should get in touch with this girl, Elizabeth Upton. So I'm curious how you guys met.
Oh, yeah, John is an amazing, amazing friend of mine. I'm so grateful to have him in my life. We really connect in on so many levels, and it's somewhat of a long story, and it's a great story, but it's a bit long as to how all of the synchronicities that led up to us, you know, being the great friends that we are today. But I guess to shorten it up a bit, I was at UC Davis at that point, and it was a day in the bookstore buying tons of books, as we do as students. And I remember I had a stack of books, and I was like literally, you know, walking, and I couldn't see ahead of me because the stack was so high. And I looked down to my left, and I saw this pile of books, and it was the Galactic Alignment. It was Galactic Alignment. That was the one. And I looked down at it, and there was just something about it that called to me. And, I had not been to the Yucatan. I did not know anything about the Mayan culture at that time. It was just purely a soul recognition moment. And I saw it, and I just thought, well, you know, what's another book? And I just kind of put it on top of the pile and kept walking. And fast forward, I'm there at my house, and I'm supposed to be studying. And instead of studying, I find myself reading his book. And I, you know, was just really interested in all of the work he was talking about. And I had no idea what a backtune was or, you know, it's like I had no concept of any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually, funny enough, I was on the radio there for a Davis station. They were asking me about my art and everything. And they happened to ask me, what book are you reading at this time? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, well, funny enough, you know, it's called Galactic Alignment, and, you know, it's about these 13 Backtune cycles, and, you know. And
they're like, huh?
Yeah, they're pretty much like, what the hell is she talking about? And then I'm like, you know, and I don't quite know what I'm talking about, but I'm interested in it, whatever it is, you know.
That's great.
So it was really interesting.
That's great. We all of us that are sort of interested in this stuff seem to have a story like that, you know, where we just sort of stumble into it, but just because we get drawn to it for some reason, and then the whole thing sort of unfolds. But early on, it's like, I don't even know. I just had to go check that out, you know.
Yeah. I did, and I was intrigued by it, and you know, so it was quite interesting. And then, you know, then later, I actually ended up going to the Yucatan Peninsula, and I didn't even realize that, you know, the work that he had done was there among, you know, really the Mayan. I didn't really quite know much about where the Mayan were even located.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. I've always been drawn energetically to Mexico and to Africa. Those are two places that are close to my heart, and I ask the question, why do certain people have certain places where they have an affinity to? You know, why does someone want to go to Germany or Greece, you know, and not, you know, Egypt or, you know, I don't know. There's just some sort of pull there that people are interested in a certain place, and mine has always been Mexico and Africa. So long story short, I went to the Yucatan Peninsula. It was, in fact, my grandmother. I was wanting to get to Costa Rica, and it was my grandmother that pulled me to the Yucatan. So I didn't even choose to go there. So this is another universal thing just kind of pulling me in. And I was there living with a family and learning the language, and was there for 3 weeks. And this goes into how I became introduced to sacred geometry and to the Mayas.
Mm-hmm.
But to kind of go quicker, because we're talking about John at this point, after my whole journey through the Mayan lands, I went back to the U.S. and I was interested in connecting in with any and everybody on the U.S. side that knew about the Mayan culture. And somebody, through my mom's wedding, he was a flamenco guitar player, he told me about this Mayan conference that was going on. And it was that weekend. So, you know, I said, oh, send it to my email. He sent it in. I showed up. I walk in. There I see that it's John's book. I didn't even know his name. And I'm like, oh, this is the book. This is the book that I picked up, and this is the book that I was talking about on the radio. And I'm like, oh, great, I'm going to get to meet the author. You know, so it was just one of those things.
Right.
And, you know, now we're, you know, practically best friends, and we talk all the time, and we've traveled together, and, you know, we just have a great time, and we can just talk for days. But that's kind of, you know, long story short, all these little synchronicities that added up to us being great friends.
Isn't it amazing, because the, you know, so much of the work that John has pioneered, I mean, the guy's just remarkable, the work that he's done. I mean, I love the guy as a person, but his body of work is going to be remembered, you know, with great, great respect. I have a strong feeling. And, you know, it's just it's amazing how synchronicity is a big part of that whole body of work, and that's the way people end up coming together, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
It's really amazing. It really is.
Yeah, I love his work, and I was able to attend this conference really fresh from the Yucatan, so I was like still buzzing from it, and so it was really exciting, because I would actually hear him say certain things. You know, forgive me, John, but his Spanish isn't so great.
Right.
And he would say certain things, and I would be like, oh, but, you know, it's a little bit kind of like this, you know. And, you know, so it was just fun, because it was something so fresh, and that he was talking about it with such heart, and, you know, it was, you know, there was a tie and a direct connection right there, because it was like, oh, you do know about this, and oh, you know about that, too. So,
right.
So it was exciting.
Your language skills in Spanish, I guess, are probably good?
Yes, I'm fluent in Spanish.
All right. That has to be a huge advantage when you're doing work down there.
Oh, yeah. It's very necessary, because I'm out there, you know, basically on my own doing this work, and it's very important to be able to, you know, not only have basic Spanish skills, but to be able to talk on different levels, because when you're with these esteemed, you know, historians and mathematicians and archaeoastronomers, you really need to know those words, and you need to know what they're saying, because I didn't have a translator. I was doing it all myself, and
right.
So, you know, it was really important to know what exactly they were talking about.
That's great. Okay, so your new film is, I'm not sure if it's titled yet. I know it has a working title, but tell us a little bit about, it's certainly about sacred geometry, and you're certainly basing it on travels and research and experiences that you've had in the southern part of the Americas, but why don't you tell us as much as you'd like about that film?
Okay, well, basically, you know, I've been filming and in production for the past 4 years.
4 years?
Yep, 4 years.
Wow.
On this documentary, and it's about the secret language of the universe, if you want to call it that. It's about sacred geometry, and this was a discipline that was taught and commonly known before the Renaissance teachings began. So philosophers and mathematicians like Aristotle and Plato and Pythagoras, and artists like Leonardo da Vinci, architects like Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, these visionaries helped to share this information with the world. And unfortunately, these teachings have dropped out of modern society, and most people don't even know that these teachings are available. But when we visit ancient sites, you know, like Stonehenge or Chichen Itza, the Great Pyramid, Uxmal, we're able to tangibly and somewhat energetically feel these principles at work on some level or another. And it was ancient cultures like the Mayans and the Incas and the Egyptians and the Acadians and the Olmecs, the Toltecs. You know, these ancient cultures are reminding us of something. And this documentary is out to explore and reveal these sacred teachings to the world once again. So these are things that we already know but may have forgotten. And as we remind each other of the archetypal principles of number and of nature, then we begin to see the interconnectedness of all things.
You had an experience at Uxmal that you mentioned. You mentioned that site. Maybe as a sort of a side note here, you could tell us a little bit about your own personal experience, because these are the things that really make us go and further investigate these things.
Yeah. It was what I call my initiation. It was, you know, it's somewhat difficult to share because it's such an overwhelming and personal experience, but at the same time, it's what, you know, drove me into doing all of this work and into learning all of the things I've been learning for the last 4 years.
Did that happen at the beginning of this four-year period, or was it previous?
It happened at the very beginning of this four-year period.
Okay, all right.
So it happened the first time that I went to the Yucatan Peninsula, and that was when I was there for 3 weeks, and I was traveling, living with a family. You know, I had the history of making documentaries, as we've all heard, went to Romania and did everything like that. But when I went to the Yucatan, I purposely didn't bring my camera because I did not want to do work, and I know myself, and if I have my camera, I'm going to be working.
Mm-hmm.
So I really just went to, you know, at that point I wasn't as fluent in Spanish, and I went to just live with a family and check it out and just explore and experience. Had no idea what to expect. I, you know, had no idea about the Mayan culture. I had no idea about any of these things, and I just went there to check it out. And one of these sites, you know, all of the sites are absolutely amazing, but it was Uxmal in particular, which is spelled Uxmal.
Mm-hmm.
Uxmal in particular was just it was like I had been there so many times before, but it was really the first time that I'd been there. You know, it's like one of those deja vu feelings. It's overwhelming, and I just had tears streaming down my face, and I was standing there in front of the pyramid, and it was just this overwhelming divine experience that I, you know, words are so limiting, it's difficult to put into words, but it was so overwhelming to me that, you know, it was basically a dialogue with the universe, as it may be. It was a moment in time where I knew that I had work to do there, and I was basically told or instructed or asked, basically told that I'm a messenger of these teachings, and if I was willing to do the work that I was there to do, basically.
Mm, awesome.
And I said, wow, you know, tears streaming down my face, I'm saying, you know, what work? What are you talking about?
Right, you weren't there planning to do a film at this point.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Not even at all. And, you know, it's like, well, what work? What is this? You know, and basically there was a series of images that flashed through my mind. It was kind of like flipping through a book really quickly, and you can't see the images or read the text, but you, it's like you get a feel for it, for the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what it felt like. And it was like I didn't see anything, but it was just like boom, 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 flashed through my mind. And I felt the magnitude of what they were asking me to do. And, you know, still tears are streaming, and, you know, wow, and there's this human part of you that's like, you know, why me? And, you know, wow, what are you talking about? And there's this other part of you that just has this deep resonance and this deep memory, and you know that that's what you're doing. So I basically made an agreement. I said, look, I'm going to go and finish college, and then I'll come back and I'll devote my life to figuring out what this is. And they it, the universe, you know, whatever you want to call it, they were like, boom, done. You know, okay.
Deal.
Deal, right?
Right.
You know, and so that's exactly what I did. And from that moment that they said deal, everything has been divinely guided. Everything has been, you know, one quote-unquote synchronistic thing after another has just been divinely led, where I don't sit in the seat I'm assigned and I'm sitting next to a cryptologist who's been breaking the Mayan codes for 20 years and, you know, I end up and land at John's thing. I mean, it was just like one thing after another. I could go on and on about all of these amazing things. It's as if, you know, I don't know where to go, and then some bum on the street tells me to go to Fifth and Broadway, and I go to Fifth and Broadway, and there's someone waiting for me. So I've really just been listening, and I've really been open, and I've really been paying attention and learning. And it's as if, you know, when a teacher leaves off on their teachings, it's as if I'm like, okay, you know, I've learned everything, then I'll just say, you know, who's next, and where is this gonna go? And then another teacher comes in and they pick up right where the last one left off, and it's just layer upon layer of beautiful information. And I'm so honored to be a part of this and to share this. And you know, it's not really my piece. I'm just a messenger and able to share. And I feel like everything I've done until this point, I've honed the tools to be able to really do this work, because I couldn't just come into this fresh without, you know, being an award-winning filmmaker. Having that, I'm able to really jump in and, you know, make things happen. And also just listen and being open and going with it, you know, which is an amazing thing to be able to do. Really. So, that's, you know,
it's amazing.
Somewhat of the explanation how I got into this.
Okay, so now tell us a little bit about the film itself. As much as, I mean, I don't want you to give the whole thing away, but, well, I guess first I want to ask, where are you in the process?
Well, at this point, we are just about to begin the post-production phase.
You've got all the footage.
Yeah. I have all the footage and beyond. Mm-hmm. I have mounds of beautiful footage. And it's just a matter of really sitting down and doing the weaving and getting it all together.
Interesting choice of words.
Yeah.
The weaver.
Yeah, weaving and bridge making. I think that's what it's all about. It's part in Spanish and part in English.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes you through the sites in the Yucatan Peninsula, to Sibichal Tune on the equinox, which happens to be on my birthday.
The spring or the fall?
The spring equinox.
In March. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Into the Cenotes, all through the highlands of Guatemala, and on to a little bit into Honduras, and then Palenque, and then back to the U.S. But, you know, as this has gone on, this very organic process, it's you know, not only just the Mayans, it's also the Egyptians, and it's the Acadians, and it's the Hindus, and there's so many, many cultures that are tuned in and have incorporated, you know, this sacred geometry within their buildings and their constructions and their teaching and their wisdom and everything that they're doing. So it's really an ongoing piece. But, you know, volume one, as I put it, you know, I'm planning on having 7 volumes,
mm-hmm.
but volume one will be, you know, mainly focused in, you know, on the Mayas, but also on just what is sacred geometry,
mm-hmm.
you know, what
mm-hmm.
is that? Because more and more people are catching on. When I began this, you know, I would mention it to people and they'd kind of give me a scrunched up face, but now I'm seeing more and more people that are tuned in and excited, and people attending conferences and their sacred geometry panels, and asked to be on one in February here in LA. And
it's amazing,
you know,
how things happen. I think,
yeah.
you know, like the Dan Brown book about the Da Vinci Code, in such a weird way, that did so much for this particular type of work, because people that would never have ever, you know, considered anything like this, you know, were just novelist type people that just read, you know, the latest, greatest novel, got their hands on that, and it's like, my God, this stuff is filled with with this esoteric type stuff. And I think that there's been a wave of that, that just being part of the wave, you know, but just from a lot of different angles, this stuff becoming much more accessible in the mainstream.
Definitely. That was a huge insight into the Fibonacci sequence, you know, and into how Da Vinci used that within his drawings and his paintings. And, you know, it brings up that so within, so without principle.
As above,
that,
so
that
below,
right, that we are all built on the same principles. And so if anything, I'm so grateful that information was able to get out there. And, you know, more and more things are becoming open to discussion, and there's so much information that's coming through that it's really exciting. And I think going through this for the past 4 years has really been exciting, because it's just it's amazing how quickly things are going these days, and how much information is really getting out there. So,
when you were in Uxmal, you had this visionary experience, this profound experience, and you decided you were going to go back there and do whatever the work was to be done. When did you discover that the work, or at least part of it, was this business of architecture and geometry?
Yeah, that's a good question. I left and I said, you know, I'm going to do a documentary, but I don't know what it's going to be about. And when I got on the plane and I was heading back to San Diego, I didn't sit in the seat that I was assigned on the plane. It was like 7 in the morning, and I did not want to leave. I loved where I was, and, you know, was sad about leaving. And I didn't sit in the seat I was assigned. And speaking of Da Vinci Code, I was finishing the last chapter of Da Vinci Code, and I look over, and the fellow sitting next to me on the aisle is reading a book about Mary Magdalene and the Sacred Feminine.
Amazing.
Right. So I think, wow, you know, and I usually like to chat with people traveling, because I travel so much. I always meet great people. But, you know, I was in this mode of just not wanting to leave, and I wasn't in a very, you know, chatty mood. But I, you know, seeing this book, I'm thinking, I mean, come on, he's reading about Mary Magdalene and the Sacred Feminine. Of course I have to talk to him. You know, so I looked over and I thought, you know, I wonder if he speaks Spanish or English. And I just began speaking in Spanish with him, and we just had this amazing dialogue. It was really literally like a chapter out of the Da Vinci Code. He pulled out his card, and on the card was a picture taken on my birthday. You know, he starts breaking down my name, Elizabeth, and what how it means El Isis Abeth. Hmm. Which is of God and through light, El Isis Abeth. Hmm. And so he's sharing all this, you know, sacred information with me, you know, and I'm like, wow, you know, interesting. And he, right then, right there, he said that geometry is the language of the universe. And when he said that, it was like there was this click that happened in my mind, that it was like the same feeling that I had when I was at Uxmal.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like looked up to the left and like out the window, and I'm thinking, that's what I got to do this documentary about, the language of the universe. Are you kidding me? You know, I mean, wow. I mean, talk about a big topic. Are you kidding? So it was like a click, and that's when I knew that's what it was about. And I just was like, okay, you know, here we go, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So then it was all about learning, you know, what exactly that meant, and if there was truth to it, and, you know, what really did that mean? What, you know, who thinks about the language of the universe anyways? And it's quite a vast topic, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's like, where do you even begin? So so that was when I found out, and that was, you know, within, I would say, a week and a half from the time that I had my experience in Uxmal. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so fast forward, you're done with school, you decide you're going to start your project, and you head back south?
Yep.
Forethought? Well, I'm sure you had forethought, but I mean, did you have people lined up? Did you know who you were going to be working with, or did you just go down there serendipitously and run into whoever you ran into?
Well, I had lived with a family when I was there for the first 3 weeks, and they had a studio. It was a beautiful home, and they had a studio on the back of the house. And so I lived in my own little studio in the back. So, you know, I worked out that I could come back there and just rent out the studio from them.
Right, right.
So I went there completely on my own, but I knew, you know, basically where I was going to live. And that was the only thing known. Other than that, I just, you know, was ready for any and everything that was going to happen. I brought my camera and, you know, got stopped at the airport. They were wondering, you know, who I was and why I had this camera. You know, and, oh, I'm just an anthropology student just checking it out, you know. And
true enough.
Yeah, true. And so then I lived there for a year and a half.
Awesome.
And it was just an amazing exploration. And, you know, everything, as I said, everything has just been divinely guided. And through Alberto Agar, who is the man that I met on the plane, Alberto Agar, he's been breaking the Mayan codes for the last 20 years. He's a visionary, and so he's also in Mérida, Yucatán, which is where I lived, in Mérida.
Wonderful.
So so I went there basically to study under him and to explore any and everything that happened along that way.
I have to ask you something here. I have a close friend who spends time at a place called Puerto Morelos. I I've been there before, and it's not far from some wonderful archaeological sites. But I was just curious if you're familiar with that particular part. It's right in between Cancun and it's up on the coast, up on, you know, between Cozumel, I guess, on the one side, and Cancun on the other. But I don't know. I was just wondering if this is a place that you may have been.
Well, I've been close by in the vicinity. Traveling to Tulum and spending time in Playa de Carmen, but I lived in Mérida, which is on the other side of the peninsula.
Right, right.
So it's about a 4-hour drive if you're going to go to Cancun or something that.
Okay.
So I didn't really spend any time there specifically. I spent more time in Tulum and in Playa de Carmen.
So this is a remarkable thing that you met this man on the plane, though, because it turns out that he's a really significant player in this whole business.
Huge. Huge. Yeah, his information, you know, all about the geometry of the universe and about the magic squares is what he calls them. He studied the Mayan pyramids for over 2 decades, and he's been deciphering their secret codes and their standard units of measurement. He's obtained revolutionary healing techniques from their geometrical pattern. And he teaches in his lectures the archaeoscience that's behind the design and the construction of the Mayan pyramids and the method and the higher purpose of their design. So he shows us how the sacred geometry is the language of the universe, and then he looks at the pyramids as life and healing stone machines. So he's also deciphered the Mayan hieroglyphs as the original healing guides. And he shows us why light is the primary cause of creation.
Wow.
So
no small thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, he sat down and taught me, you know, like in the old days when you have, you know, a master and you sit down and you have these lectures that go on, and I'm scrawling and he's drawing and he's showing me about these grids that he calls the 7 supercomputers and how these grids then align with the sacred cities in the Yucatan, and how not only the cities are aligned but the planets are aligned, and then there's certain colors that are aligned with those certain planets, and it's all in the numbers. Basically, and the numbers of the angles that are used within the various buildings, and the number of steps, is everything is calculated, and everything is there for a very specific reason.
Right.
Where as Uxmal is aligned with Venus, which is associated with blue, it goes into all of those profound measurements that have to do with Venus, and so that is all transcribed on the building itself.
Yeah, including orbitals and all kinds of things.
Right. Yeah. So you go there and you feel that. And, you know, people go there and they feel things and, you know, they say, wow, how did they do that? You know, it's amazing. But when you really look at it and when you really start to begin studying with sacred geometry and with these teachings, you know, you really see how it's in our everyday world, our everyday experience. And then ancient cultures are reminding us of that even more because, you know, they're utilizing the magnetic ley lines and they're aligning everything. And they were sky watchers. Mm-hmm. You know, the Mayans were sky watchers. And they
sophisticated, you know, sky watchers.
Sophisticated sky watchers, yes, and studied the patterns and the cycles of nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through nature you can learn a lot about everything, and you know, you can tell how a cycle works. You know, they with the paper that they used to use, they used it from the inner bark of a ficus tree, and they would cut the plant at the full moon. Because at the full moon, it gave it enough time to regenerate itself. So every 28 days, they would cut it back. And so they weren't disrupting the plant, and they, you know, were able to create the paper at the same time. So it was all about respect, and it was all about, you know, keeping those cycles in mind and respecting nature and everything you do. Yeah. Because if you take care of her, then she'll take care of you. And, you know, we've gotten far from that these days, but you know,
the more and more
that people learn about these things, then you realize how important it is, and you realize how simple and yet profound it is at the same time. So.
All right, one more break, okay?
All right.
And we'll come back and we'll talk some more wonderful stuff. Elizabeth Upton on the web at elizabethupton.com, and you can link over there from my site as well. Hey, Elizabeth, you want to take a couple phone calls?
After the break, sure.
Maybe? Well, I'll open up the phone line. I'm having some computer problems tonight, and the phones are tied into that, so I'm not sure how much luck we'll have. I'm not even sure if they're working because I haven't tried it yet. But I also have a friend here that's in the studio, and he might have something to say, and I got a couple more reasonable things to ask you as well. So we got plenty to take up the next segment, but I just wanted to make sure it was cool if we get a phone call or two, okay?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, and I have a lot more to share, too, about what sacred geometry really is.
Good. Okay, we'll come back and do it in just a few, okay?
Okay, great.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Elizabeth Upton. We've had the pleasure of speaking with Elizabeth for the last hour and a half, and we'll get another 30 minutes or so in just a few. So let's play a piece of music here and see if this works. This is called Chewbacca's Garden from the Palace of Industrial Hope. This is the new up. Chewbacca's Garden from the Palace of Industrial Hope. The band is called The New Up. They're a San Francisco-based rock and roll band who was here, I don't know, 3-4 months ago or so, and I saw them and got to know them a little bit and really enjoy playing their music. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We've got Elizabeth Upton on the line with us from her place in Southern California. The phones are ringing, so Elizabeth, if you don't mind, let's take a phone call, all right?
Sounds great.
Good evening there. This is Mike. You're on Radio Orbit. Who's this?
Hey, Mike. Bob Bold.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Man, fancy meeting you here.
Oh, it's been a long time.
Elizabeth, this is one of the local faithful listeners and a good friend of mine. His name is Bob. Bob, what do you got to... He's a filmmaker as well, and I'm sure he's very interested in talking with you. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Mike and I have discussed a couple of film projects. We have trouble coordinating our schedules, but I'm intrigued with working with Mike with some of his, would you say, more visionary enterprises, so to speak. Anyway, I'm really intrigued with your work. I did a real quick review of your bio and everything. I mean, I can't even imagine what films you haven't done. It's just such an incredible variety of work. And, I'm just beginning to get into the real 2012 thing myself, too. I've been interested in archaeoastronomy for literally decades. I'm 70 years old, and I've been interested in this stuff all my life, visiting Stonehenge back in my 20s and things like that.
But wonderful.
Something I was interested in asking you about, and it's a little off topic for where you're discussing right now, but have you heard of the work of Maya Deren, the lady who did the great ethno-documentary film in Haiti on voodoo?
Maya Deren, you said?
Yeah, D-E-R-E-N. She's regarded as the sort of the mother of documentary filmmaking. She worked back in the 40s and influenced people like Stan Brakhage and the Maisel brothers. Kind of my background is in documentary filmmaking. I began working in 16mm, back in the 60s and things like that. And, I'm totally into digital technology now in terms of working on DV cam tapes and things like that. But it's interesting to hearken back to some of these people. Maya Deren was an incredible lady. She really got very much enamored with the whole idea of voodoo in Haiti and its spiritual content. I mean, voodoo is grossly misrepresented, like Santeria. Every time you have like a story from Miami Vice or something, they'll have the Santeria priests, calling down terrible spells on people, and they ignore the incredible depth of the spirituality of basically the African religions of the diaspora, particularly the different cults in Africa, especially from the Niger River,
Thank you for the information and thank you, for the accolades on my work. I really appreciate that. And
Do you do a lot of stuff on YouTube?
Do I? Or
Do you have much on YouTube?
I do have things on YouTube and also MySpace. They're kind of both, the same content on either. So you can go there and see a lot of the intros to a lot of the feature-length pieces that I've done.
Yeah.
But thank you for her name. I've actually heard of this piece, but I haven't. I didn't know her name. I didn't have it memorized or whatnot.
It's called Horseman.
I would love to see it.
She was working on it when she died, and her husband or sister-in-law or somebody kind of finished it up. My ex-wife saw it in Santa Fe about a year ago. There is a print floating around somewhere. Mm-hmm. And again, since someone else edited it, I doubt if it really carries the power of her, her feeling about it. But as a woman filmmaker, this is the lady who kind of broke into film. I mean, this is at a stage when women were not making movies and certainly, not documentaries in a sense. And for her, like she describes going to Haiti and having a spiritual awakening, very much the way you feel about the Mayan cosmology. Mm-hmm. She felt drawn to this, and you'll find some, you'll probably find some real resonance with your spiritual journey too, because of the sense of Africa.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. It's wonderful because you know, there's a lot of pieces like this, and especially with ethnographic film work that was done earlier, you know, it's hard to get copies of these things, and I wish that there was a better way that we could have that. I've even, you know, as a film student, I was thinking, you know, I'd love to just start my own store so everyone can get a copy of these amazing visionaries and the work that they've done.
I think it would be interesting for people like ourselves to kind of seek these things out because, again, this represents our roots. I mean, it's like the stuff that Dolly was doing, you know, Andalusian Dog and Age of Gold.
Exactly.
Like that.
I love that piece, yeah.
Hey, Bob, what I'll do is I'll send you Elizabeth's email address, maybe with her permission, and maybe you could share a little bit that you guys could start a dialogue maybe on email or something.
I've got
Sounds great. Off her
site. Is it the same one that's on your site?
Yes, on your website? That'll link you right there.
I'll just, in fact, we probably should link up through MySpace. Because it's a good way to kind of transfer messages and things like that. And the nice thing is there's some visual material. You can go to my site where I really liked your photographs, too. The still work is quite nice. Mm-hmm. Because,
great.
I do a lot of still work myself. I have, like, thousands of slides, basically. But, I mean, about a year ago I made the transition finally to digital still photography, and I'm never going back. It's like it's so amazing, the ability to manipulate and change the images are so incredible.
Well, thank you, Bob. It was nice to meet you, and thank you for your feedback.
Sure. Well, I really believe in what's called synchronicity and the ability to utilize coincidences, happening to meet somebody on an airplane. I love to do that kind of stuff myself. Some of my most amazing, well, like even my connection with Mike was I just happened to be flipping around the radio dial one night. And, wham, radio orbit comes up, and, as I say, I never look back, you know.
All right, Bob. Well, thank you, my friend.
I'm going to sign off, but I'm really enjoying the program.
Thanks, man. I'll talk to you soon, too, okay?
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Bob. All right. Interesting stuff for sure, and Bob's a talented filmmaker around town, and that's cool that he's listening. I'm sure that he's been interested in the things that you've had to say. Let's talk a little bit more about sacred geometry.
Okay. Let's see. I would love to give some credit to Michael Schneider and his book titled A Beginner's Guide to Constructing the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
I found this later in my journey of sacred geometry, and it's really great because he single-handedly put together a text that weaves together so many disciplines that were once taught under the same umbrella. And he's also gathered an astonishing amount of quotes, and some of which I'd like to read a bit of. But, Schneider has done exactly for the literary world what I plan to do for the documentary world. And he's translated these sacred geometry teachings into everyday experience. And, you know, really, you don't have to be a mathematician to understand this stuff. You don't have to be a philosopher or an intellect. These are simple yet profound concepts that just require an open mind and an open heart.
Can you give us an example or two?
Yeah, these are fundamental aspects to nature and to design, to art and to poetry, to music and to color. You know, things that affect us on all levels every minute of every day. And, you know, like many sacred things, you have to know where to look and how to look. But once you do, it's very apparent, and it's there. And I'd like to just read a short excerpt from the introduction, because the way that Michael Schneider talks about this, I think, will ring true for a lot of people. So he says that math was dry and mechanical and had little relevance to my world. If we had looked at numbers to see how they behave with each other in wonderful patterns, I might have liked math. Had I been shown how numbers and shapes relate to the world of nature, I would have been thrilled. Instead, I was dulled by math anxiety and pop quizzes. Fortunately for me, when I was 16, one of my teachers mentioned that mathematics can be found in nature. A six-sided snowflake is shaped like a bee's cell and quartz crystal. I was stunned to make the connection. How could something as apparently irrelevant as mathematics be related to something as wonderful as nature? The ordinary world opened up to me and spoke the language of number and shape. No longer a foe, the dreaded mathematics became at once a teacher and a tool. Nature wasn't what it was made out to be, an antagonist to fear, conquer, and exploit, but a garden of wonder and a patient teacher worthy of great respect.
Hmm. Ain't it the truth?
And it's absolutely amazing to me, because I think so many people have had this feeling of, you know, math or geometry, and you know, you hated your class, and it was pop quizzes, and it was all these things that are not fun. But when you see the connection and all of the levels that are written in the language of mathematics, and you see its characters are triangles and circles and other geometrical figures, you know, where when you understand them, you're able to understand it. And I believe it was Galileo who wrote that, you know, without these teachings, without comprehending the language and interpreting these characters, it's like wandering about in a dark labyrinth. And, you know, it's really, sacred geometry, simply put, is about the language between numbers and shapes, and then these numbers and shapes are then the building blocks of our universe. So instead of thinking of numbers as we have been taught in school, we should rather think about the shapes and patterns that these numbers represent. So every number has a distinct quality and a personality, if you will. And that personality relates to the other numbers and the other forms that they represent.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, instead of thinking about a 3, just like a 3, we can think about a 3 as having a 3-ness. And then it's this 3-ness and the triangle that it forms and the union that it represents that relates and talks to all the other 3-nesses out there.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at numbers as having distinct qualities, and we begin to see that these numbers represent something more than just a value, it's like a personality, and it's a code that's just waiting to be transcribed. So it's absolutely amazing when you look at the world's, the religious art, the architecture, how all of these things have been designed using these timeless symbols and these
mm-hmm.
patterns of nature, the cycles that we talked about before, the numbers, and it's remains, as Schneider says, it's symbolic of our own sacred inner realm. So these symbolic structures of awareness open up these ideas of these archetypal numbers that are, you know, as above, so below, that are so within, as without. You understand these levels. And in ancient times, these concepts were deemed so important that it was built into the culture on every level. So you have the ancient idea of the sacred, which is has a particular significance that's involved in consciousness and awareness. And then you have the word geometry, which stems from geo, which means earth, and you have metria, which means measure.
Mm-hmm.
So we have sacred geometry together, and we find science and spirituality, which are hand in hand. So here then we have a consciousness approach in looking at the measure of the earth. Now, it's kind of funny because we can take that even further, because the earth is just one of the celestial bodies that are in the universe. So it's pretty, you know, geocentric of us to only talk about the earth. So, you know, we should probably say something like the sacred universe teachings, you know, or something like that. I mean, who really knows? I struggle with the name all the time because words are pretty limiting. But I know that when I finish the documentary that the name will make itself known.
Mm.
But, you know, you have, like, modern thinkers like Joseph Campbell and Houston Smith. They called these studies the perennial philosophy.
Sure.
Or the primordial tradition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not surprising that geometry is one of the oldest sciences that we have today. So it's really interesting. And the concept of math itself, you know, it doesn't carry with it the same respect that it used to. You know, for the Greeks, geometry was held in the highest honor.
Sure.
It was, you know, none were more illustrious than the mathematicians,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Pythagoras is one of the famous Greek philosophers we hear about, and his advanced students were called mathematokai. And that meant those who studied all.
you know, Pythagoras talked about music as well, and and related some of these concepts to music. I've got a friend of mine who's in the studio who's a musician, plays a lot of different styles, but maybe you could relate a little bit about that if you're familiar.
Yeah, well, his students were engaged in deep studies of natural science and of self-understanding. And through the natural science, the music, and the self-understanding, they're able to understand all the levels of, you know, what they were considered, those who studied all. So there's so many levels to the notes that are tied into the letters, that are tied into the numbers, that are tied into the frequency, that are tied into certain colors. So there's a whole slew of things that are tuned in to maybe one note of a musical scale, you know, and then you have that number that ties into all the other numbers. So it's absolutely fascinating when you see the deeper level that math can provide. And I didn't even like math in high school. It wasn't something that I was really excited about. But now that I see these levels here, it's so exciting, you know. And I mean, I didn't know that in Old English, you know, the word Mathian meant to be aware. I mean, you tell that to a high school kid and it's like, oh, well, going to class and it's all about being aware, you know. Unfortunately, it's not really quite like that anymore. But even an old German word, Munden, that meant to awaken, you know. So unfortunately, you know, the word math, we hardly think of it as being symbolic of anything, you know, other than boring.
You know, I have a degree in mathematics.
You do?
Yeah, I do, actually. That was what, I have a bachelor's of science in mathematics and a degree in physics. But I actually felt the same way about math as most people. I was never really excited about it. I did it because it seemed like a reasonable way to get a decent paycheck without getting an engineering degree and that sort of thing. But later in my own life, after I was out of school and I got interested in some of these side stories very similar to what you're talking about, that I realized very closely to what you're realizing, is that, wow, mathematics is a language of God in a certain way, and the more you learn about the way it's represented in nature, the more comfortable you can become with it, sure.
Yeah, and if I would have been taught anything, you know, remotely close to what I've learned in the last 4 years, you know, I might have paid better attention, you know.
No doubt, yeah.
I think it's a bummer that it's been stripped of its noble qualities, and, you know, hopefully we can get back to that someday, and all of our ancient cultures are reminding us of that, you know. So it's, you know, it's not a wonder that we have all these amazing thinkers that we're taught about, you know, but at the same time, we don't really realize the depth of information that they're going into.
It's really true. Our ancestors were wise way beyond our years, that's for sure, and we don't look back at their teachings with enough intensity, I don't think, at least not typically.
Right, yeah. So,
you know, what is it they say? Nothing new under the sun, right? I mean,
right.
All this stuff has been learned before. We think we're so smart. What we actually are is we've forgotten so much that it's time to learn a lot of things that our ancestors knew. We need to learn them all over again, you know?
Yeah, Plato said that all knowledge is already deep within us, so no one can really teach us anything new.
Amazing. Well, I tell you what, I think there are some people that learned a few new things tonight, hopefully, and it was a pleasure sharing your thoughts and ideas and experiences with me, Elizabeth. It's been wonderful.
Definitely. Thank you so very much for having me on the show. I really, really enjoyed this time that we could connect in, and I really enjoyed sharing different parts of the documentary that I haven't even talked about yet.
So. Well, I'll tell you what, when you get closer to release, we'll have you back on the air and we can talk more, okay?
Great. Sounds wonderful.
And in the meantime, we got a minute or so. Why don't you tell people how to connect with you and maybe what you got planned for the near future?
Yeah, definitely. And before I get into the connection, I just want to say thank you to everyone that I have worked with on this piece, all the collaborators and Alberto Agar and John Major Jenkins and Randy Masters, who's been teaching sound healing and the spiritual side of music and the universe, David Ulansey and his work, John Burke and the Seed of Knowledge, Stone of Plenty, Margaret Ruby, her work with the DNA and the healing, and Alan Combs with Synchronicity, and you know, there's so many people that I just want to say thank you to all of them and everyone in the Yucatan Peninsula who's listening in, and all of the amazing work that everyone's done there, with Felipe Chanchi and Alejandro Medina and Enrique Perez and Gustavo Pacho and all these amazing people, Mark Callahan. I have so many people that I've been able to talk to, and through the documentary you'll be able to hear from them as well. But there's about 40 people that I've talked to over these last 4 years that are going to be in the documentary. So I wanted to just take a minute to appreciate them and to say thank you so very much for their time and for their friendship. And you can tune in to my website, elizabethupton.com. You can also send me an email at elizabeth.upton@gmail.com. And also there is a newsletter that is sent out every month. So if you want to subscribe to that, you can as well. Send me an email, and I will keep you posted on that. And other than that, thank you, everyone, for the support.
All right. Well, good. That's wonderful. And I'll have this program up as an MP3 and as a podcast tomorrow before noon sometime, and I'll send you the link as soon as I have it. So if there was any problem for people that were trying to listen online, and I know certainly there were from some of the notes that I've been getting in email, we'll make it available right away for them, okay?
Great, wonderful.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you very much again, and enjoy the rest of your evening, okay?
Yeah, thank you. You too.
All right,
take care.
Have
a good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Elizabeth Upton, everybody, on the web at elizabethupton.com, and you'll be able to link there from my site as well from here on out. Wonderful stuff. Thank you, Elizabeth, for a very entertaining and fun program, and I look forward to having you back on the air closer to the time when you release your new film, and I'm looking forward to seeing it as well. You know, I wonder if I can still grab Elizabeth, if she's still here. Are you still here? Elizabeth? No, she's not. I was going to tell her about True False. And she can probably hear this after the fact, but the True False Film Festival that goes on here in Colombia is one that might be interested in looking at some of your films. So, anyway, check that out on the web at truefalse.org, I think. All right, it's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Colombia, 89.5 FM. Play one more song here by the New Up, and then we'll hit on out of here. I think that Ruth and Crash Landing is crashing somewhere else tonight, so I'm going to shut the station off in the next 10 or 15. Thank you to everyone who's been listening, and I appreciate it. We'll be back next week with Larry Evans, and we'll talk about mushrooms. Amazing mycologist from the Pacific Northwest, and the guy who runs Fungal Jungle. And he's also an interesting musician, and we'll have some fun music to play next week as well. So come on back, and we'll have a good time with Larry Evans next week. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and your families. And one more piece of music here from the New Up. This one is called
Ellipsis.
Yeah, this is Ellipsis. Take care of yourselves, everyone. It's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia.